talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, beneath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe
welcome to John Stadtmiller's program. I'm just blanking tonight. I've had very little sleep. I have worked diligently. This is Jeffrey Bennett, by the way. For those of you who are regular listeners to RBN, you'll normally hear me on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons at 2 p.m. Central Time with a program called Protecting Your Wealth. And it's pretty obvious. We discuss economic issues and precious metals and the economy and the ups and the downs and mortgages and Wall Street, et cetera, et cetera. We're not doing that tonight. As a matter of fact, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, with the exception that I was just very ill yesterday and did not do a live program, I've been taking the Thursday program and turning it into a somewhat dark presentation. And in doing so, we normally open with the piece of music we opened with tonight. An amazing cover or remake of the old Simon and Garfunkel song, The Sounds of Silence. It is what I fear most greatly in this country today. Oh, there's yelling and screaming, and there's anger, and mental war, physical war, spiritual war is probably amongst the biggest. I'm going to take you down a path in this program tonight that is, I believe, going to be very unusual for what you're accustomed to during this two-hour time slot. Due to the intensity of what I'm going to cover over the next 2 hours, we have cut back on commercial breaks only at the bottom of the hour and, of course, at the top between hour number one and number two. Why the sounds of silence? Because I believe that there is far too much silence in this nation from those who need to be speaking and acting louder. A good example. I'm very close with a very large group of people down in the South. Much of it has to do with my upbringing, my education. Yes, I was born in the North. But knowing what I began to learn at a very young age, I understood that, well, it was not a civil war. It was Mr. Lincoln's war. If you want to learn much about history, I can certainly guide you to one of our websites where you will learn the truth And that's what we try to provide you with here. Sounds of silence. But I'll not be silent tonight. And my goal is to bring you to a point where you will no longer be silent. As I've stated on the air for 24 and a half years, it does you no good to just tune in and listen to a group of broadcasters who share their opinions, share news stories and headlines and the pros and the cons and the in and outs every day. If you don't take some of what we share with you and get off your rear end and do something with it. Now, I've made no bones about this. Some years ago, John was on the air one night and had made a very firm statement that unless the listening audience did not stand up and begin to financially support this network, that he would shut the GD thing down. And he used those words. Well, he decided not to do the program the next day and asked me to fill in. Now, let's get something clear right away. I will not be taking callers this 2 hours. I rarely do it anyway. Time will not allow for it. If I did, I'd need a third hour. But I took a call the next night, and it was the call that finally made me realize I wasn't taking calls any longer. Because people go in directions that have nothing to do with the program. Other than the gentleman called and said, well, I don't know what would happen, you know, if we didn't have this network to listen to, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, how many hours a day do you listen? The old 12, 14? I said, why? Why don't you find the 4 to maybe 6 hours a day that bring you the greatest, most challenging programs? And then get off your dead ass and go out and start fighting for what needs to be fought and battled in this nation. You begin to go out and to teach and to educate your neighbors. Well, it's got to start within your own home, your spouse, your children, your grandchildren, whatever the case may happen to be. And then you move to the guy next door and the guy on the other side. And pretty soon you get together with the people within your block. I don't care if you're the old-fashioned block party. Hey, man, those were fun. But not by yelling and screaming at one another. You agree to disagree if that's the case. I don't know why I did that. All the years I've known it, all the years John's had that name, the National Intel Report, and I totally blank. I'm telling you, I've been up since. I went to bed at 3 o'clock this morning, and I don't think I slept an hour, and I was up by 5:10, and I had to get up at 5:30 anyway. So it's been nonstop. These are the kind of things that causes problems. But, you know, then you move out of your neighborhood. The insanity that goes on in this nation today, worse than anything I have ever witnessed in my life, worse than the people who argued and fought and raised holy hell against the Vietnam War. Those who never welcomed me home, I didn't give a damn. I came home and went back to work. I got back to my life. That was my choice. I wasn't looking for a parade. I wasn't looking for a pat on the back. Just the next stage of my life. But that's me. Some people need that welcome home. I did not. I saw a headline today that the Democrats' goal is impeachment by Christmas. It never ends. It's pure insanity. The yelling, the screaming, the fighting, the Pelosi and Schumer walking out of this meeting yesterday. And one of the rumors I heard is that after they left, there was a degree of laughter in the room by both sides of the aisle. We've got people who are in elected office that have been there for 20, 30, 40 years or more in some cases, that are so stinkingly wealthy, and some of the worst politicians we've got up there all seem to be from California. But we've got some in Illinois, too. I see Dick Durbin's raising his ugly head again. But they don't call him Dick for nothing. A week ago, I'm going to run through this very quickly because I don't want to waste time. I have much to accomplish here these 2 hours. We've got some very specially selected pieces of music that we will be running before and after breaks and et cetera. But each piece has got a distinct meaning to it and a specific reason for playing it, because it all has to do with this program today. Headlines from last week. Trump tells bankrupt UN to find money elsewhere. My entire comment was hot damn screw them anyway. High school declines free Chick-fil-A lunch for their teachers, alleges the company has an anti-LGBTQ views. The next headline is Chick-fil-A is once again the teenager's favorite restaurant chain, according to a new survey. Headline I saw this morning says their profits have doubled. People are tired of the jive. They can go to Chick-fil-A and send their little girls into the restroom and not have to worry about some pervert coming in there behind thinking that he's also a woman. Headline, Seattle schools might combine math and ethnic studies? What does one have to do with the other? Oh, that's right. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker recently signed a bill making schools teach the LGBTQ contributions to society. I'll tell you what, my godfather was a homosexual. Back in those days, they were called queer, whatever. I was extremely close to Kirk until his passing. He never tried to pull anything. As a matter of fact, when I got married 49 years ago, last week, Kirk was one of the attendants at our wedding. An amazingly talented human being. And never did I was I ever concerned about it. You knew there was something funny, and everybody's open about it. But today, it's become nuts, absolutely insane. Headline, Sheriff's Office ignores an ICE retainer and releases an illegal alien who then rapes a woman. And I've seen other headlines this week where another illegal was let go and went out and killed three people. Headline, whistleblower has ties to Biden. Oh, please, with the whistleblower stuff. That Christine Ford chick was allegedly a whistleblower against Kavanaugh. The filth that goes on in D.C., the hatred, more so on the Democrat side. The sad thing is, too many people on the Republican side just don't seem to give a damn. Neither side is fighting for what they were sent to Washington to do, was to fight for we the people, what was going to benefit all of us in this nation. Whistleblower. You know how to whistle, don't you, baby? You just put your lips together and call Kamala Harris. Oh, my word. Tom DeWeese wrote a column last week, Growing Government Tyranny, Democrats Empower It, Republicans Are Clueless. More nonsense in the sports world. The NBA is now groveling to China. Well, gee, let's see. National Football League, the NFL, won't hire, Kaepernick. Hey, maybe they can get the NBA to give the guy a job. Yeah, right. Who cares? New York City, the term illegal alien can cost you $250,000 to use that term. Those are terms that are used in government contracts and paperwork and laws, et cetera, et cetera. Where does Bill de Blasio get off pushing for a law like that? Minnesota schools are making Arabic classes mandatory. Now, there could be a possible fraud in that particular article, I've been told, but we don't know. My friend Al Benson wrote a column, We Have Met the Enemy and He or She is in Congress. Frosty Wooldridge writing last week, Pelosi in Congress promoting the immigration invasion of America. It goes on and on and on, people. My favorite one was the whole thing about the big blackouts, the power blackouts in California. All these people have been trying to get people to buy electric cars, except guess what? Now the electric car owners are shocked by California blackouts because they've got nowhere to plug their damn cars in. This is the kind of insanity. And that's just, I'm just touching on it. Is America entering the dark age? A little history, if you don't mind. Many of the stories about the gods and heroes of Greek mythology were compiled during Greek Dark Ages. Impoverished tribes passed down oral traditions that originated after the fall of the lost palatial civilizations of the Mycenaean Greeks. Dark Age Greeks tried to make sense of the massive ruins of their forgotten forebears, monumental palaces that were still standing around. And yet as illiterates, they were curious about occasional clay tablets they plowed up in their fields with incomprehensible ancient Linear B inscriptions. Now we, on the other hand, of the 21st century, we're beginning to look back at our own lost epic times and wonder about these now nameless giants who left behind monuments that we cannot replicate, but instead merely use or even mock. Does anyone believe that contemporary Americans could build another transcontinental railroad in 6 years? My God, the Californians have been trying to build a high-speed rail line. But after more than a decade of government incompetence, of lawsuits and cost overruns and constant bureaucratic squabbling, they've given up. The result is a half-built overpass over the skyline of Fresno, and not one single foot of track has been laid. So who were those giants of the 1960s responsible for building our interstate highway system? California's roads are now mostly the same as they were inherited, although the state population is tripled. They've added little to the freeway network, either because folks forgot how to build good roads or would prefer to spend the money on redistributive entitlements, you know, to illegals and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When California had to replace a quarter section of the earthquake-damaged San Francisco Bay Bridge, it turned into a near disaster. 11 years of acrimony and fighting and cost overruns and a commentary on our decline into dark ages. And yet 82 years ago, our ancestors built four times the length of our single replacement span in less than 4 years. It took them just 2 years to design the entire Bay Bridge and award the contracts. But today, our generation requires 5 years just to plan to replace a single section. In inflation-adjusted dollars, we spend six times the money on one quarter of the length of the bridge and require 13 agencies to grant their approval. In 1936, just a single agency in California oversaw the entire project. California has not built a major dam in 40 years. Instead, officials squabble over the water stored and distributed by our ancestors who designed the California State Water Project and Central Valley Project. Contemporary Californians would have little food or water without those massive transfers, and yet they often ignore or damn the generation that built the very system that saves us. America went to the moon in 69, and on that day I was home on leave from Vietnam, watching it on a black and white television in North Hollywood, California, staying with my aunt and uncle. But when man went to the moon in 1969, it was supposedly primitive computers and backward engineering. Does anyone really believe we could launch a similar moonshot today? No American has set foot on the moon in 47 years, and it may not happen in the next 50. Hollywood once gave us blockbuster epics, brilliant westerns, great film noirs, classic comedies. Now it endlessly turns out comic book superhero films or pathetic remakes of prior classics. Our writers, our directors, our actors, they've all lost the skills of their ancestors. But they're also cowardly. And in regimented fashion, they simply parrot boring race, class, and gender bromides that are neither interesting nor funny. Does anyone really believe that the Oscar ceremonies are more engaging and dignified than in the past? We've been fighting in Afghanistan without result for 18 years. Our forefathers helped to win World War II and defeat the Axis powers in 4 years. And in terms of learning, does anyone really believe that a college grad in 2020 will know half the information of a 1950 graduate? I'm going to tell you something, folks. I've been attending the College of Hard Knocks my entire life, and I've probably got greater knowledge than most of those that will graduate today. Oh, that's right, because I was educated. They've been indoctrinated. Think about this. In the 1940s, the early 50s, young people read Faulkner, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Pearl Buck, Steinbeck. Are current novelists turning out anything comparable? Could today's high school graduate even finish The Good Earth or The Grapes of Wrath? The Grapes of Wrath. I've done amazing programs around that film. One of them I should probably rerun on a Tuesday. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Social media, of course, is quite impressive. The internet gives us instant access to global knowledge. We're a more tolerant society, at least in theory. But Facebook is not the Hoover Dam, and Twitter is not the Panama Canal. You see, our ancestors were builders and pioneers and mostly fearless. We are merely regulators and auditors and bureaucrats and adjudicators, censors, critics, plaintiffs, defendants. Social media junkies and thin-skinned scolds, in other words, basement dwellers. The distant generation created, we mostly delay, idle, and we gripe, and we whine, and we cry. And as those of us who have lived on this earth as long as we have walk amid the refuse and the needles and the excrement of the sidewalks of major cities in California, we sit motionless on our jammed ancient freeways, we pout on Twitter and electronically whine in the porticos of our Ivy League campuses, will we ever ask, who were these people who left these strange monuments that we use but can neither emulate nor understand? In comparison to us, they now seem like gods. And I begin to look at some of the monuments that are being destroyed in this country, and the statues and the historical stuff. My God, we had Columbus Day just days ago, and we can no longer celebrate Columbus because they want to change it all to the indigenous people stuff. We have Black Pride Month, LGBTQ Month. We got this month, that month. But the white guy, forget it. We're gone with the wind, baby. I saw something on Facebook last night that stated that there's groups out there that are now claiming that white milk is racist. My comment on Facebook was, so fine, go buy a bottle of Hershey's chocolate and put it in your milk and shut up. This is the insanity we live in. Evil takes on a plethora of forms in our everyday lives. It can be the ultimate evil is in the devil incarnate. You know, murderers, rapists, politicians. But the banality of evil, such as simple courtesies, falling by the wayside, not holding the door for the person behind you. We discuss how any person could be turned into an authoritarian tyrant given the proper situational circumstances. The true nature of humans is one of self-interest, a how will this action benefit me in the long run attitude. How has the progressive movement made evil a common occurrence? Lack of morality, ethics, the inability to determine what is a valued life, what is viewed a mere convenience to be removed, much like a dermatological imperfection. Over the years, we've all watched the erosion of our society, the uprising of wokeness. Nothing has prepared me and most of you for the utter lack of regard for life as we currently see in today's world. Serial abortion is a form of birth control, and in some cases, an appalling sexual fetish is being seen more as society degrades and crumbles before our very eyes each passing day. Evil now takes the form of utter lack of once commonplace morality and disregard for others' lives. Oh, this isn't just referring to the fetus, my friends. The father rarely has a say in the fate of the unborn child anyway. Women are free to terminate a pregnancy without consent from the father, no matter what the relationship status. Feminism has led to more women soapboxing about their right to choose, and yet what they rarely consider, or in some cases are not even privy to, is that early leaders of the feminist movement were against abortion. The radical feminist Susan B. Anthony referred to abortion as child murder, viewed it as a means of exploiting both women and children. Alice Paul, who drafted the original version of the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, referred to abortion as the ultimate exploitation of women. The inconvenience of an unplanned pregnancy has led to the normalization of disposal of human beings reduced to nothing more than medical waste. Disregard for life and the lack of fortitude to take responsibility for one's actions has now forged a path for not only death in the biological sense of a person, not given the choice that the mother has chosen for them, but also a symbolic death. A death, my friends, of a social culture, of ethics and values that we once held as a collective society. An impersonal, a spectral death that accompanies the physical death of discarding that mistake. Something that was once seen as a last resort, an act of pure desperation. Something to be ashamed of is now celebrated as some curious rite of passage for modern women. Abortion, as birth control, is now on the rise. The opposition to states passing what are called heartbeat bills is more prevalent. States like Georgia, Louisiana, Missouri, Alabama, and Ohio have all signed into law these very types of bills. And once a fetal heartbeat can be detected, abortion becomes illegal according to the state laws, which are to take effect in early 2020, if not held up in the courts. All of which has raised eyebrows and voices. Progressives want government out of their uterus, but they cling tightly to the Supreme Court ruling of Roe v. Wade, which makes abortion legal. You see, you cannot have your cake and eat it too. Either the government is to remain hands-off on matters such as abortion, in other words, reproductive rights, or it isn't. Grasping at the legal precedents you prefer is not a valid argument. When a woman seeking abortion refuses to look at an ultrasound prior to termination, and when pro-choice advocates fight against mandatory ultrasounds, it is to preserve this distance between the woman and the contents of her uterus. It's easier to remove what is perceived as a clump of cells than it is a child. I could continue on with this particular subject for a great length of time. It is one that upsets me. In a world where the counterculture is made up of conservative values, the progressives have gone front and center with their woke culture. What used to be rebellion for young adults is now the norm. Drinking, having sex, experimenting with illicit substances is an everyday occurrence. And the people who are engaging in voluntary celibacy and or committed monogamy, church, family, they're the new rebellion. Women are no longer responsible for their actions. It is seen as noble in a sense to make many sexual partners with no regards for safety. That new outlook, which was a concerted effort by the feminist movement, is an undertaking to see women as free and empowered, as if they were enslaved or held captive prior to the movement. My friends, we live in a world where everything is acceptable except the yearning for traditional values. This is the new punk. We'll be back in just a few moments.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago.
Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now, or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth, or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214, or by email at KettleMoraine, Ltd. at Cox.net, for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
That I am so damn happy that I'm closer to the end than I am to the beginning. I do not relish the days that my granddaughters are going to have to face. Bad enough what my kids are going to have to face, but damn it, they've helped cause a lot of this within the family. But when I say my kids, let's talk about all the kids in this age. You know, my children are in their late 30s, almost 40, one of them is. And I look at the generation behind them and the generation behind them. It's scary. You know, I heard that, and I don't know if I shared this with you earlier in the hour. And by the way, this is Jeff Bennett. I do welcome you back to the National Intel Report. I'm sitting in for John tonight. Kind of because I wanted this 2 hours. And you don't quite yet know where this is going, and you will by the end of the time. And I'm going to challenge each and every one of you before this is over, as I have been challenged, given much of the posting I've been doing on my various websites over the last couple of weeks. Last week, Trump had a huge rally up in Minnesota. The mayor up there, or the governor, absolutely refused to allow the police to stand up there for security, et cetera, et cetera. The place was full. They come out. Antifa starts just harassing the living daylights out of people, causing their usual garbage, kicking people, getting a bunch of, you know, MAGA hats, lighting them on fire. I mean, this is private property destruction, let alone what they're doing to the people. Okay? Now, Trump goes down to Dallas, Texas, I think it was yesterday. I'm told that there were, you know, literally a sold-out crowd in the stadium, 20-plus odd thousand people, and maybe as many more, 15 to 20,000, that were standing outside the building. Well, guess what? Antifa didn't show. You know why? Because the people in Texas are packing. And I ain't talking fudge, people. Yeah. Sidearms. Things were a little different in Dallas, weren't they? But once again, there's more of the insanity. The crybabies, what I refer to in so many cases as the basement dwellers, are out there causing problems. They call themselves Antifa, anti-fascist, and yet they are more fascist than anything most people alive in this country today could ever understand. Thank you to the education system for so much of this. And so I maintain that maybe, in fact, the book is about to close on the late, great United States of America. Oh, our story could have ended quite differently if America had embraced the truth. That would have put us on a far different road than the one we are on today. But instead, we're steamrolling toward oblivion. And only a small handful of brave watchmen are even warning about the ominous fate that lies directly ahead of us. You see, my friends, we live in a time when evil is called good and good is called evil, and just about every form of human degradation that you can possibly imagine is absolutely exploding in our society. Many of us have warned for years to our listening audience and our readers that if we stay on the path that we're currently on, there is no future for this country. And I think an awful lot of people assume that, well, maybe we were exaggerating. You know, we're just looking for ratings on the listeners. No. I think for very few exceptions, this was never the case. Our societies throughout human history have believed that they can stay ahead of the consequences of their bloody evil ways. But of course, the truth is that justice is a relentless predator. We've completely rejected all of the values that this nation was founded upon. We've embraced wickedness on an industrial scale, and the blood of millions upon millions of our victims cries out to us from the ground. Those who would dare to warn us to turn from our evil ways are some of the most hated members of our entire society. Now, this particular author, whose words I'm sharing with you in this case, is not in the habit of talking about Hollywood movies. I happen to do that. But he believes that this Joker movie may be the perfect movie for such a time as this. And sorry, it ain't Heath Ledger, but ultimately the character portrayed by Joaquin Phoenix is a clear reflection of where this entire society is at this moment in time. You see, in the movie, the Joker doesn't really believe in anyone or anything. His entire existence is focused on himself, his own pain, and anything that makes him happy is justified, no matter what it may mean for others. One of the best reviews for the film was written by John Nolte of Breitbart, who stated, "But I saw what I saw, and what I saw is this. An artist who turned his legitimate frustrations with the Antifa, Occupy, Black Lives Matter, resistance crybabies, these anarchist fascists who seek to marginalize men like Todd Phillips for who he is, punish him for his success, and then censor his art." And I think Phillips took all of that and turned it into his muse, not only to create the stunning Joker, but to reinvent himself as an artist. "Joker is you," Phillips says.
Joker's the godless god you spoiled losers worship, a sociopath who believes in nothing, who wants to burn down society because he's not happy all the time. Your leader is madness, anarchy, intolerance, jealousy, envy, bigotry, hate. What Nolte has said there is quite insightful. But by pointing a finger at the left, he's only covering half the equation. You see, the truth is, my friends, that the Joker is all of us. We so desperately want to blame someone else for our problems and for the problems of society as a whole. And in many cases, it's quite true that the other side is made up of really bad guys. But what we don't realize is that our side is often made up of really bad guys, too. And most of us really good guys just sit back and get down on our little knees and we pray that we're going to get deliverance. You don't get deliverance until you work for it. You see, it's become simple. By pointing out the depravity of the other side, that does not make us the good guys. We can see examples of this in the world of politics each and every day, more so in this nation than at any time in our history. A politician can give endless speeches denouncing a certain practice, but then if he votes for a bill that specifically funds that practice that he denounced, in the end, he has as much blood on his or her hands as all of the other politicians. No, it's certainly true. The Joker is a bloody movie, but our society as a whole is absolutely drenched in blood. We're deeply obsessed with ourselves, but we're seething with hate towards others. We're always wanting more of everything. But no matter how much we get, it's never enough. Americans are unhappier than they've ever been before, and the depths are the depths of despair at an all-time high. And so what do we do with our sociopaths? We send them to Washington to represent us, of course. My friends, how long can we possibly keep traveling down this road? How long will be too long? To me, it's already been too long. Among many of you that I do interact with, there's an increasing realization that time is running out for this nation. The book is about to close on the late, great United States of America, but you see, most Americans have absolutely no idea that this is about to happen. I'm going to share something with you for a moment. And it was kind of a quirky thing that I came across this on Facebook, posted by who I refer to as my post-911 cohort, Dennis Jackson. Dennis and I co-wrote a petition that was posted in the very earliest days of my website, federalobserver.com, to once again rearm our commercial airline pilots. And of course, you know that that expired in July of 2001, right? Dennis posted a piece the other day written by a woman named Alyssa Algren. She's a grad school at the University of Wisconsin, not the Madison one. She's going for an MBA. But the simplicity of what she presented, well, no, she didn't make it difficult to understand. She made it quite simple. And because of that, maybe we'd be able to reach some of the entitled basement dwellers, the cell phone crowd, to understand the simplest things in life. And I certainly urge you to be able to share this with your kids, your grandkids. Maybe they would understand. Alyssa opens by saying, I'm sitting in a small coffee shop near Nokomis trying to think of what to write about. I scroll through my news feed on my phone looking at the latest headlines of Democratic candidates calling for policies to fix the so-called injustices of capitalism. I put my phone down, continue to look around. And I challenge you, the listener, tonight. How many of you go out to a Starbucks or a Dutch Bros or some local coffee shop or place that you like to go to, and you sit around and you begin to look around? You see some people talking freely. Maybe they're working on MacBooks, ordering food they get in an instant. You've seen the cars go by outside, and it begins to dawn on you. We live in the most privileged time in the most prosperous nation, and yet we become completely blind to it. Completely blind to it. vehicles, food, technology, freedom to associate with whom we choose. But these things are so ingrained in our American way of life that we don't give them a second thought. We're so well off here in the United States that our poverty line begins 31 times above the global average. 31 times. Virtually no one in the United States is considered poor by global standards, but we know a little bit better than that. Because in a time where we can order a product off Amazon with one click and have it at our doorstep the next day, we're unappreciative, we're unsatisfied, we're ungrateful. Well, for me, I'd prefer not to order from Amazon anyway, because they've taken on the same mentality of the early Walmart. They're closing down mom-and-pop businesses. The generation today of this college-educated woman is being indoctrinated by a mainstream narrative to actually believe that we've never seen prosperity. The unappreciation is evident as the popularity of socialist policies among this generation continues to grow. Democratic congressman, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recently said to Newsweek, talking about the millennial generation, she said, an entire generation, which is now becoming one of the largest electorates in America, came of age and never saw American prosperity. Never saw American prosperity. Let that sink in. For when you first read that statement or listen to that statement, you've got to think to yourself that that was quite literally the most entitled and factually illiterate thing that this particular author had heard in the 26 years on this earth. She says, now I'm attributing Ocasio-Cortez's words to outright dishonesty. I think she wholeheartedly believes the words she said to be true. Many young people agree with her, which is entirely misguided. This generation is being indoctrinated by a mainstream narrative to actually believe we've never seen any degree of prosperity. And she says, I know this firsthand. I went to college. Let's just say I didn't have the popular opinion, but I digress. She says, let me lay down some universal truths very quickly. The United States of America has lifted more people out of abject poverty, spread more freedom and democracy, and has created more innovation in technology and medicine than any other nation in human history. Not only that, but our citizenry continually breaks world records with charitable donations. The rags-to-riches story is not only possible in this country, but it's not uncommon. We've got the strongest purchasing power on earth. We encompass 25% of the world's gross domestic product, and the list goes on and on. Well, there's some issues she's not really touching on. Sure, you got the greatest purchasing power on earth when the banks just keep on printing and printing and printing, and the purchasing power of the dollar goes down and down and down. But that's the program for next Tuesday. Because she says these universal truths do not matter. Because we're told that income inequality is an existential crisis. Even though this is not an indicator of prosperity, some of the poorest countries in the world have low income inequality. We're told that we're oppressed by capitalism, even though it's brought about more freedom and wealth to most people than any other system in the world history. Look at Venezuela. Venezuela, just a few years ago, was the fourth largest economic nation in the world, and now they're completely and totally bankrupt, so much so they've invited Bernie Sanders to come on down and take a visit to find out what socialism and communism is really all about. Because, my friends, the only way we're going to acquire the benefits of true prosperity is through socialism and centralization of federal power, even though history has proven time and time and time again it only brings tyranny and more suffering. So why then, with all the overwhelming evidence around us, evidence that anyone can see sitting at a coffee shop, do we not view this as prosperity? We've got people who are dying to get into this nation. People around the world destitute, truly impoverished, and yet we have a young generation convinced that they've never seen prosperity. And as a result, they continue to elect politicians dead set on taking steps toward abolishing capitalism. Destroying the free market, my friends, will undo what millions of people have died to achieve. Why? Because the answer is that this generation has only seen prosperity. And mommy and daddy have footed the bills, never made these dumb kids work for a damn thing. That's my comment. There's no contrast. No, we've not lived in a Great Depression, although we did suffer through a few years of a Great Recession. We've not had to live through two world wars. I came along at the end of it. Never seen the rise and the fall of socialism and communism, at least in the country we've lived in. We don't know what it's like not to live without the internet, without cars and smartphones. We don't have a lack of prosperity problem. We've got an entitlement problem, an ungratefulness problem, and it's spreading like the plague. And so with the current political climate giving rise to the misguided idea of socialist utopia, will we see the light? Or will we have to lose it all to realize that what we have now is a degree of true prosperity? Think about that. Destroying the free market will undo what millions of people have died to achieve. Alyssa Algren's generation is becoming the largest voting bloc in the country. Frankly, my friends, that scares the hell out of me. But she seems to think that we've got an opportunity, her generation has an opportunity to continue to propel us forward with the gifts that capitalism and democracy have given us. Don't get me started with the discussion of republic versus democracy. Okay? Go find an old Black's Law dictionary. You'll be amazed how closely knit the two of them are. One is not spoken of without the other. The other option is, my friends, that we can fall into the trap of entitlement and relapse into restrictive socialist destitution. The choice doesn't seem too horribly hard now, does it? Now, am I expecting you to agree with every single statement I'm making during this two-hour presentation? Absolutely not. But before this hour is over, this next hour is over, I'm going to take you to a degree of challenging you to think, to begin to take some of the things I've given you, and I'm going to guide you to where everything I've presented you on this, presenting to you on this two-hour program, I'm going to guide you where you can go read every darn bit of it. So you can take your time and you can decipher it word by word, letter by letter. You put it together in your own combination that works for you. No, we're not all going to be in 100% agreement with every statement, every word, every mannerism that takes place in politics or anything else. But the fact of the matter is, most of us, you and I, all of us that are here together tonight, we could sit down and have a conversation. We could talk about it with somebody, not yell and scream to someone. This is what we're fighting in this nation today. Because one of the problems we face, my friends, is that people all across this globe who live in modern comfort have their heads stuck in the sand. And the lucky ones, or maybe even the smarter ones, are those who depend far less on modern day electronics. Come on, people, your televisions can spy on you, and a device named Alexa can turn itself on and off at will and record private conversations in your home. And all of that represents a real and extremely enormous problem to me, a threat to freedom and liberty and simply life in general. And for those who remain doubtful, allow me to be your guide for a few moments. We're going into a little bit into the future, back to the future. And our writer was born on November the 6th in the year 2020. He was just about to turn 40 years old when he woke up one Saturday morning in the year 2060 to the sound of his iPhone alarm at 4:30 in the morning. And he sat with his coffee brewed automatically after his wake-up alarm sounded, ruminating about some old letters of, my great-granddaddies, which had described a society where liberty was being destroyed. We're getting that close, huh? Holy moly. 30 seconds. Jeez. Well, I may have to unfortunately park this one, which is quite an interesting piece. I'm not going to have enough time to get this through.
Well, let me just share with you. This is a piece written by a very good friend and continued contributor. His name is Justin O. Smith. And it's published at federalobserver.com. It's entitled Back to the Future, Breakfast and Death in a Brave New World. It's well worth looking at.
I don't want to be. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children. Victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world. That will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Homeowners.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.